Some nights, way out there. Other nights, pretty close to planet Earth. In South Korea, President Bush is looking for a show of unity among Asian leaders to press North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program. Among those gathering in South Korea for a 21-nation summit, the leaders of the five countries, the United States, China, South Korea, Russia, and Japan, negotiating with North Korea for its nuclear disarmament. In a moment, a very special program on Coast to Coast AM, because this truly affects all of us, short and long term. You might not think that right now, but you will by the end of tonight. Our guest will be Charles R. Smith. His book is called Deception. We're going to talk about China in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Cyber war columnist Charles R. Smith, one of America's leading experts on cyber technology and its implications for war, terrorism, privacy, in every way technology, how it interacts with our lives. He's an exclusive columnist for Newsmax.com. As a cyber war expert, currently president, CEO of Soft War, his own consulting company, currently providing security software for medical information services and hospitals, encryption software for secure email, direct communications, electronic commerce, and internet website services. Our guest on Coast to Coast. Charles, how are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you for having me on board. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Nice to have you back. Hey, before we get into China, the UN wants to somehow take over the internet. Is this possible? And why do they want to do this?
Money. Why does the UN usually do anything that they want to do?
Handouts, you know, and money, huh?
Well, you know, there is this general feeling that they're out to help you. You know, hi, I'm from the United Nations. I wear this blue hat. And please ignore the mortar shells falling around us, because I can't do anything about it anyway. The United Nations and many of the countries that participate in the UN isn't exactly, you know, your democratic, cuddly organization that you just would invite into your home. So there are a lot of countries who don't particularly care for the information highway because the information on there disturbs them. You know, we've had that kind of knee-jerk reaction here in the U.S., but in places like Syria, Iran, China, and other points, disturbing information can be considered a way of jailing dissidents, and the United Nations would like to put some control on that for their totalitarian pals. You know, of course, the Chinese are notorious for using the internet
for their own benefit.
Oh, well, not only that, but to persecute anybody that happens to post something just about anywhere that they don't particularly care can be charged with subversive behavior. That's 3 to 5.
My gosh.
And if they think they can press their case, it could be actions against the state that can probably put you up from 10 to 12.
How easy it would be to frame someone, Charles.
Oh, incredibly easy. And of course, you know, the irony here is we here in the democratic free West, especially in the liberty-loving land of the United States of America, help the Chinese government in that organizations such as Google and Yahoo, Cisco, have sold technology to the Chinese government to assist them in pursuing dissidents and people who post things that they don't like to read.
God.
So the, I don't know, in a way I have made the basic equation that this is about the same order as selling stun batons and tear gas to the apartheid government of South Africa. It was illegal then. It's worse now. It's electronic type of chains. There have been people who have been jailed because of information released, forced to be released by Yahoo, because Yahoo was told, if you don't do it, you're not going to work here. Cisco and Nortel and others have supplied the Chinese MSS, or the Ministry of Security Services, with software and hardware to track down people on the net.
And you probably never have heard from these people again once they go and get them.
Well, you might. You also might read about their funeral.
Yeah. Or not know anything.
Well, you know, the one of the issues that we have to cover here is at what point are we actually helping a dictatorship or totalitarian regime to keep its boot on the neck of its own people? And is it really worth having a fatter checking account this week?
And then not having anything in it in the not too distant future.
Well, you know, therein lies the point. And again, the United Nations is notorious for assisting governments such as these. You got to remember, what was it? China was running the Human Rights Council in the UN. And
now that was a joke.
You know, the very first thing that they wanted to do was pull the sanctions off of Sudan because they didn't see any human rights violations there. You know, never mind that, you know, you had Sudanese jet fighters bombing civilians, unarmed civilians who were trying to get to UN stations to get food and food aid, right in front, of course, the UN folks who are there who can't do anything
about
it.
Well, the atrocities, Charles, for example, just quickly to divest for a moment to another side, in Darfur, what's going on there? How come we're not going over there to save these poor people who are being butchered?
Well, the very simple answer to that, again, is money. The Sudanese government has an exclusive deal to supply oil to China. Oil is prevalent in the southern regions, which is including Darfur and others. The Sudanese government is backed by the government of China. The Chinese government has made it very clear to their Sudanese friends, as long as you keep supplying the oil, we'll make sure that the United Nations and those other pesky international organizations won't bother you, seeing as how we are members of the Security Council. So every time that any sort of action has been brought up to the UN Security Council, China has made it very clear they would use their veto to overrule it. So, you know, when you have a big pal like that, nobody's going to take a lot of action lest something terrible might just happen. So the bottom line there is, you know, we have the Sudanese government and their friends in Beijing. And of course, the guys in Beijing are in New York City. They're on the UN Security Council.
Sure.
They're on the Human Rights Council and stuff like that. They've been working very hard to keep sanctions off of Sudan for what they're doing, which is essentially genocide.
It's pure murder.
Well, absolutely. And in many cases, as long as the money's good, and this is something about Beijing that's interesting, they don't mind selling weapons to the Sudanese. Remember those you know, jet fighters dropping bombs on unarmed civilians? Well, those are Chinese-made jet fighters, MiG-21 copies known as J-7s that the Chinese government supplied to the Sudanese, trained their pilots. They have about 2,000 to 3,000 military personnel total in Sudan. Most of them are either advisors, trainers, or maintenance crews who work on sophisticated equipment like radars and surface-to-air missile systems and jet fighters. My most fondest recollection was the interview with a guy by the name of Francis Bach. He was a tribal member in the southern region, captured by one of the Sudanese militia, sold as a child, as a slave. He managed to walk out of Sudan into Egypt. He relayed to me wonderful stories of having, you know, villages being mortared. Of course, you know, we're talking about no one in the entire village has even anything close to a gun. You know, the militia would set up about a mile to 3 miles out and just lob mortar shells on them.
Annihilate all of them.
Well, as many as they could. the relief organization that was backing Francis brought me pictures of some of the equipment, and a good portion of the mortar shells that we have in photograph form were manufactured
in China
by the People's Republic of China. Mm-hmm. The same guys who make your toys. Doesn't that make you feel warm and fuzzy
warm
for this
and fuzzy
Christmas season?
Yeah. Well, one more quick question then on the internet, and then we'll get into China. How would the United Nations take control of the internet technically? How would that
happen? What they're trying to do is get a hold of the ICANN, and that's ICANN. It's an organization that assigns the web addresses and the web names. That's basically the control. That's how essentially I can get softwar.net to go up there. Well, you know, if you want www.evildictatorship.com, obviously you have to go to ICANN, and they assign it to you, and then they give you a web number. That's the technical stuff that goes behind it. Well, if you want to monitor that or control it or make sure that you don't issue that name to organizations that you don't like the Falun Gong, for example.
Right. Or maybe they don't like Alex Jones's stuff, for example.
Or maybe they don't like your stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Or your stuff.
They would essentially not allow you to have a website. And that's just the kind of beginnings. Of course, you know, if you happen to use email, and they can turn to the guy who gives you email and say, how would you like to not have access to the internet?
God.
And so on and so on. So that's the kind of thing that they want to do. You take over the centralized clearinghouse that assigns the names and digits and all of these wonderful things that goes with it, the technical side. Then at that point, you have the power to say no to somebody.
Where's that clearinghouse based now?
Well, right now it's in California. It's a independent corporation. Think of it more like the Postal Service or the Federal Reserve than actually controlled by the federal government.
Okay. And do other countries need to go through this?
Yes.
Okay, I see.
At this point, the only country in the world that does not have a two-character reference is North Korea. And that's because Kim Jong-il doesn't want to have anything whatsoever to do with information that could flow to his people. About everybody else, you know, Zimbabwe, China, Backscratchistan, they all have one. So, you know, the bottom line there is, you go, you pay your money, and they'll put you up, and that's it. There's really not a lot of questions asked.
So who would then give the United Nations permission, if this happens, to take control of this company?
Well, we would here in the United States in order to give it up.
So you think it's our call?
Oh, absolutely. And we've already told them to go take a flying leap at a rolling donut.
That's what I thought. But they still want it, don't they?
Oh, well, absolutely. And they're going to be raising a ruckus and pounding their shoes on the table and, declaring that this is totally unfair and being in, and all we can say is tough. You didn't invent it. Al Gore invented it. So,
his pet.
Go ahead and make my day. The way that we do it, which is, if you come and you have a checkbook, and you can meet the price, which is not much, you're on. The information highway, the internet, is probably the greatest threat to totalitarian and dictatorship regimes around the world, short of, free radio.
Absolutely. Bloggers, for example, Charles, are uncovering more information about things that are going on than reporters now. It's amazing.
Well, there's a lot more of them. One of the things that I think even the Western news services dislikes is the internet. You can just ask any major newspaper like the New York Times why their subscriptions are actually narrowing and not increasing. And that's because more people are relying on the internet to mm-hmm. get information in a timely fashion than, going to the only paper that carried any news.
True. Well, one of the things I think these newspapers are doing wrong, because they're reporting their circulation is dropping, and it's dropping considerably. They should come right back, though, and say, however, our internet readership is way up. And they're really not forcing that issue, and they should be. It's poor marketing on their part.
It's poor marketing, and it's not very good foresight. It's kind of like relying on Telegraph when you have a television station next door.
I read the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, their website, every day. I don't get the paper out here in Los Angeles, so when I want to just keep tabs on what's going on in St. Louis, I just go to sdltoday.com, and there it is. It's perfect.
And, people like myself, I am a journalist. I do publish in print as well as on the net. I rely on the internet not only for contacts and information, but in the form of networking. And, you know, this is extremely important, especially for the world of reporters. You can actually create your own information base, and this is what the bloggers are doing. You create a network of individuals who are like-minded, who have a wealth of knowledge, and they can turn you into sources that are extremely accurate and timely. Many of the stories that I have ended up breaking were because I had a reader who read something from one of my articles, mm-hmm. maybe not necessarily from one of the original websites, maybe through a search engine, and then popped back and said, well, you know, I have this information, and here's where you need to ask, and this is what I know. It's actually kind of amazing to watch stuff like that happen. I've always been astounded because the kind of information, in some cases, the individuals are, it's not only reliable, we're talking about people who are very highly placed inside major governments around the world who have a news story they want to get out.
Absolutely. That's how we get a lot of our tips, same way. And without the internet, without this capability, we'd never get it, Charles.
Well, you know, that's the other point, is we need to keep it, not only keep it going, but actually make it freer. And I think that's where countries such as China, Sudan, Iran, and others are really scared to death. They're afraid of our aircraft carriers, and they're not exactly happy about the B-2 bomber. But what frightens them, what keeps them up at night, what makes them keep their secret police working overtime is the internet.
I think so, too. Because, you know what, they want to control their people. And they know that a free internet, eventually these people are going to see what's going on in the outside world and within their own countries.
Well, free flow of information is the critical issue. And the more that we have, the less likely these regimes can exist. I've often said about the Soviet Union in the same fashion. MX was powerful, but it was MTV that killed them. And in truth, it was that's kind of the reality. The same kind of controls they're trying to place today are the same thing that the Soviets did. I mean, in order to use a Xerox machine behind the Iron Curtain during the Cold War, you had to go to the secret police and get permission. That's kind of hard to do in today's world. And when you start talking about scanners, the internet, and cell phones with cameras on them that link right up to the net, that just scares the daylights out of these dictators.
And so that's why they need to control it, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's also why they would like to catch anyone using it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we come in at the other end of this. The enforcers can use the net to reap a benefit. And we here in the United States, I've named some of the companies involved, have given, sold the appropriate technology to certain countries like China to jail dissidents, to people who either want to speak their mind or would like to worship God in their own way. Well, you know, that's not a nice thing to do. It's just as good as if we threw them in jail.
All right, Charles, stay with us. We'll come back in a moment and get into China, if we can just climb the wall, on Coast to Coast AM. The program will originate out of the cave in St. Louis for the holidays, starting on Monday, so stay tuned for that. This has about a month to go as well. The free CD offer for you, Perfect Possession, Exorcisms. It is given to you when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. So if you've been thinking about it, now's the time. You can order online by going to coasttocoastam.com. It's right there on the bottom of the homepage. Or call this toll-free number. Operators are there all the time. 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. All right, our guest is Charles R. Smith. His book, Deception, website, softwar.net. Charles, let's talk about the Chinese threat, first of all, then we're going to get into all these other issues around China. The threat itself, tell me in your words what you think it might be.
Well, I think one of the very first items that we have to understand about China and the threat is that China is not a partner in the war on terrorism. China is actually a country that sponsors terrorism. And that is the best example I can think of to display exactly what I'm talking about is a very recent event where two Chinese nationals were caught here in the United States attempting to sell Chinese-made shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles to a federal undercover agent.
Who wanted them, if he were here for other purposes, to use in this country, right?
His intention, and he made it very clear to the individuals who were assisting him with this purchase, that he was going to shoot down an American airliner. Now, these two Chinese individuals, they have been indicted, arrested and indicted in California. A guy by the name of Tung Wu and Qing Shen were part of a larger operation, better known as Smoking Dragon. This was a organized crime effort, a triad effort here in the United States to peddle things like drugs, counterfeit $100 bills made in North Korea, and other items, including weapons.
Those bills probably look pretty authentic, too.
Very authentic. Yeah. The North Koreans are extremely good at this. Of course, when you have state sponsorship to create counterfeit money,
sure,
it's fairly accurate.
Yeah, whatever budget you need for printing, it's all yours.
Well, you know, that's how Kim Jong-il pays for both his gourmet food and some of his sports cars.
With counterfeit money?
Oh, yeah. The North Koreans probably deal out somewhere between $300 and $500 million a year.
Oh, my God.
They're also a major exporter of heroin, which they produce domestically as well. That's part of this operation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these two guys apparently ran into a federal agent through one of their drug dealings. The agent said, look, you know, I want to shoot down an airliner. I'm part of a larger organization, a terrorist organization working here in the United States. So these guys called back home to China to the Xinhua Corporation. That would be Xinjiang, a subsidiary of the People's Liberation Army. It is actually wholly owned and operated by the Chinese Army. It is an arms manufacturer.
And they have many of those kind of relationships.
Oh, yeah. This one is one of those that's officially listed. We have it on a DIA document up on the website. I've had it in DIA and Commerce Department records also displayed up on the website on what part this company is. It actually emanates from an organization known as Cost End. That plays a major role in my book. It played a major role in the 1990s in the Chinese espionage. Costin is the Chinese Commission on Science, Technology, and Industry for National Defense. When I sued the federal government, the Clinton administration claimed that Costin was a civilian organization, and therefore all documents and dealings with it were classified by commercial and civilian privacy rules.
Uh-huh.
I, of course, dropped the bios of the leaders of COSTIN on the federal judge, all of whom are in uniform. No one at COSTIN is a civilian. The lowest ranking member on their board is a senior colonel. He's from the Politburo, so he's there to watch their politics. The rest of them are PLA headquarters generals.
What did the judge do when you did that?
He lost his cookies. He accused the commerce lawyers of lying to him. He threatened to throw them in the clink right then and there.
Good.
This is Federal Judge Robert Payne. He told them to turn over all the documents to him so he could review them. And if they didn't do so within, I think, like 5 days, he would send federal marshals to have them arrested. So they ended up having to turn the documents over to him. And some 1,000 pages of those documents were eventually released to me, which showed COSTIN was taking tours of the United States and picking whatever technology they liked. And these were Chinese flag generals, General Shen, General Hua, the leader, General Ding Hengao.
And they're spending all kinds of money to get this
checkbook
done.
Diplomacy in the finest values.
Absolutely.
Now, COSTIN, of course, owns its own corporations, their armament firms. They create missiles, bombs, rockets. Jensen Dai sells the, what is it? It's the QW-2, better known as Advanced Guard 2 surface-to-air missile. This is a shoulder-fired baby. It's very nice. It's a copy of a Russian-made missile called the Gimlet. It has a relatively small warhead, but it's extremely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You can knock down an airliner with one, no problem.
Within, what, 10,000 feet, something like that?
About 2 miles.
2 miles, okay. Yeah, well, it's almost 10,000 feet.
Yeah, right. 2 to 3 miles, not a problem. You catch one taken off for landing, and you're anywhere around the airport, you should be able to hit it pretty good.
And pretty easy to hide, too.
Yeah, you want to try to do it while they're taking off, because obviously they're heavily loaded with fuel. And it makes it very difficult to land when you're heavy, especially if you've suddenly been damaged,
mm-hmm.
and you're burning. You may lose hydraulics in the process. You know, all sorts of nice things happen real quickly when a missile chews a big hole in you. These are heat seekers, so it would be probably aimed at your engines. You can actually offset these. These are fairly advanced missiles in that you can essentially have it home in on the engine, but it will offset itself by a certain number of feet forward or back, depending on how you want to set it up, to a more vulnerable point on the aircraft, depending on what you're shooting at.
Of course, there's not much more vulnerable, Charles, than the engines. If
well,
up there,
yeah,
10,
the civilian airliner, yeah. You know, the kick to this is, of course, these guys not only took the cash, arranged the deal. The indictment papers noted that not only were Jensen Dai officials involved in Beijing, but they also have an unnamed co-conspirator as a, quote, Chinese general. That would probably be a member of the General Logistics Division or COSTIN, one or the other.
Now, did they deliver the product?
No, but the cash was on its way, including a $2 million bribe to a foreign official, to the relative of a foreign official. The objective here was the missiles would be transshipped to another country, a third party, again unnamed. The missiles then would be repackaged as civilian parts and shipped in to the United States.
Or they would be reassembled.
They would probably come in whole. They're not that big. You know, bottom line on that is, obviously, how many COSCO container ships do we search from end to end?
Probably not a lot.
Less than 2%. And if you wanted to ship in that kind of weapons and you didn't know that they were there, then, you know, you have a container ship full of shoes, toys, and cheap textile clothing, and one box of missiles. Which one are you going to pick? So, needless to say, all of this deal was set up. The guys were busted. The indictments have been set. We haven't named the Chinese general. I've been trying desperately to find out who it is. This isn't the first Chinese general been indicted by U.S. courts.
And will a Chinese hand him over? I doubt it.
No, of course not.
No, and we'll continue doing business with them, trading with them, and we're going to get into that tonight, too, why we have this partnership with them when they're doing these things. But nothing will happen, will it?
Well, you know, not to the Chinese side. Zijin Dai probably will be banned from delivering any further exports to the United States.
So
it's not
former,
like they're going to be shipping any more missiles
so,
over here.
So they'll form a different company or something.
Well, they...
They'll get around it.
They try to. Zijin Dai has been sanctioned before. They were selling missile parts to the Iranians for long-range ballistic missiles. You know, this kind of event has actually happened once before. We had the Polytechnologies and Norenco fiasco from 1996, where a two, again, Chinese nationals made an arrangement with a federal undercover agent to import 2,000 fully automatic AK-47s. The weapons were actually imported. They were busted in the harbor at L.A. The Chinese agents there, Chen and Ma, were arrested, were indicted, they were released, and they immediately fled the country.
What
a shocking surprise.
Released, yeah.
You know, Norenco and Polytechnologies, of course, were banned from doing business in the U.S. Norenco was a major seller of small arms here in the United States, was.
What are they trying to do, though, Charles? What's their motive here?
Create terror. This is a war against the United States. Of course, if you got a checkbook, it helps.
So you think they might have financed and helped finance bin Laden and his group?
Oh, absolutely. The Taliban, most of their weapon systems were Chinese. Most of the advanced weapons that are in Taliban and Al-Qaeda hands that we have discovered over the past 12 months in Afghanistan have been advanced Chinese weapons sold to them. Of course, for hard gold cash.
You know, we keep playing around with this North Korea to try to abandon its nuclear weapons program. With the truth, all we got to do is tell China to get it done, and it should be done, right?
It'd be done tomorrow.
Exactly.
The North Koreans wouldn't have these weapon systems if the Chinese hadn't supplied them in the first place and continue to supply a critical ballistic missile and other weapons technologies, like nuclear weapons technologies. We do know, you know, a classic case here, the Khan indictments. That was Dr. Khan from Pakistan, the guy who was supplying the nuclear weapons bomb designs to our friends.
Who got a very, very slight slap on the wrist, and now he's out with his billions or however amount of money he made.
Yeah, he was told he was a naughty boy by the Pakistani authorities. The kick to that is that the bomb designs that Khan sold, we got a copy of them from our friends in Libya. When Gaddafi decided to come clean after the Gulf War, Gulf War II, he gave us the planned designs. They were Chinese.
Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese nuclear weapons designs.
So they went from Khan to them.
Right. Khan, of course, arranged a deal with the North Koreans to supply the Pakistani army with their long-range punch. It is called a GARI. It is an identical copy, bolt for bolt, of the North Korean Nodong missile. You don't get a copy unless you made some sort of deal. They were flying centrifuge parts into China, refueling the airplane in China, landing in North Korea, dropping off the weapon system parts for manufacturing enriched uranium. Koreans were supplying the parts for the Nodong. They put it back on the same plane. It flew back to China, refueled there, and then landed in Pakistan.
What confuses me, Charles, is we've got a number of U.S. companies who are investing in China, trying to do joint ventures in China, trying to buy Chinese companies. I don't understand why we're doing that on one hand. And of course, they're we're their biggest customer, so all that's going on an economic basis. Yet there's this other sinister part of it, and we don't seem to be doing anything about it. I don't understand this relationship.
Well, you know, there are a lot of us who really don't either. But then again, there are a number of people like Alan Greenspan at the Federal Reserve who loves China, and of course, we have Henry Kissinger, who is doing business in China. We have, as you pointed out, many corporations who are attempting to do business in China who just love the cash. You know, obviously, if you were to go down to your major retail outlet and buy a toy, a shoe, a coat, a
T-shirt, anything.
Right. You will find invariably the words made in China
and
on it.
They all used to be made in the USA years
right.
ago.
Well, you know, this is what we call deindustrialization. There are individuals here in the United States for hard cold cash who would sell their mother if need be.
And they probably already have.
Well, you know, there are individuals in the United States who feel that we should be selling weapons to the Chinese, and some of them are actually in highly placed corporations. And I got one of those quiet, off-the-record interviews, and the executive said, look, you know, I'd like to sell this advanced technology to the Chinese. You know, we already sell it to some of our allies. You know, what's the deal with selling it to the Chinese? And I looked at him and I said, listen, you know, would you sell dynamite to the crazy guy next door who threatened with you with a shotgun and wanted to kill your wife and child? And he just kind of looked at me and goes, I don't understand. And I guess I looked at him and said, apparently you don't understand.
Exactly. And that's probably part of the problem.
They don't quite see the same threat that we do because, you know, we're sitting here talking about a conspiracy to sell surface-to-air missiles to a terrorist organization, even though it turned out to be an undercover agent here in the U.S., that goes into the highest levels in the Chinese government and into the Chinese military. At the same time that this was happening at the APEC conference, the Chinese tabled a motion made by the United States to assist globally, and especially in the Asian areas, the security around airports against surface-to-air missiles such as these. The Chinese vetoed the idea.
Vetoed the idea.
Oh, of course. They tabled a motion, and that's it. It's over. So it's essentially their policy, not a problem. We don't mind if an airliner goes down in New York or L.A. or somewhere over the Midwest. That's not our problem. That's your problem. You know, if it happened to be a Chinese-made surface-to-air missile, well, you'll have to prove it. And then, of course, we'll say that it was, you know, just an accident or a
stolen
or whatever. Well, you know, when we're sitting here looking at an unindicted co-conspirator as a Chinese general, when was the last time you heard of an American general being indicted for selling weapons, advanced weapons, that would be used by terrorists
mm-hmm.
inside China?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen.
Well, no, of course it wouldn't happen.
So, but why? Why the relationship then?
Well,
why do we allow this to continue?
In the same answer I gave you for the previous questions, money. M-O-N-E-Y makes the world go around. Alan Greenspan loves doing business with China because he knows those IPOs and merger deals help him and his banker buddies and his lawyer buddies who arrange all of these things.
Well,
off the top.
Does there then get to a point, Charles, where China has made so much money in its trading with us and everything else, and we're not its only customer. We're its biggest, but we're not its only customer. Do they get to a point where they then have sold as many goods and services as they want, and they basically decide, okay, now it's time to retire, and let's begin to confiscate the United States? Will there be a point where they just decide to do that?
Well, what they're trying to do is the same thing they tried to do with Unocal. When they get a large chunk of cash like that, they'll come forward and try to buy portions of our major industries.
First and foremost.
Absolutely. There are some real good deals over here in the United States.
I'm sure they're already silently or publicly buying real estate, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the twist. Like the Unocal deal. At least 30% of that money that was being put up to purchase an American oil company was Chinese government money. At the same time, China was receiving food aid from places like Canada. Does that make sense?
No. Stay with us. Back in a moment. Charles R. Smith, our guest on Coast to Coast AM.